I'm trying, Jennifer.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_beeble. In today's show, we're going to be answering your questions that you guys sent in a few days ago for another edition of the Mailbag podcast. Michael Bolton's ready.
Let's get to it.
Hey, let's get stuck straight into answering these questions. The first question that's coming through here is from HeD, who's on Twitter at AdidasHeD. He says, enjoying the pods, Josh. Thanks, HeD. I just started our dynasty draft and I got Durant and Curry in the first two rounds. Am I missing something or is this not really good? 12-team head-to-head league. Well, people are really down on Warriors players this season. I did a mock draft yesterday that had Steph Curry fall to number 10 when, if we remember, he was the number 2 ranked player per game after the All-Star break. Everyone's got it in their head. Oh, the Warriors is going to rest everyone down the stretch. And yes, Durant, Curry, Draymond, Clay, they did miss time last season. But they all had legitimate injuries. Curry tore a ligament in his knee. Durant had rib cartilage fractures. Draymond had a consistent sore shoulder. Clay had an injury which is completely escaping my mind at this point. And yeah, they will probably rest a game or two. And I talked about that in yesterday's podcast with that 5-game week they have during fantasy playoffs. There's no chance they're playing 5 games. But Curry had been healthy prior to this season, excluding playoffs. Durant had a few injury problems over the last 4 to 5 seasons. But it's not like they're just having wholesale rests every week and they're 4 games a week. They're only playing 1 game. They're taking 1 game off every single week. That's not the case. Now, those guys are older. They're approaching 30 or they're at 30 in many cases, and they probably only have 2 to 3 more years left at this same sort of level. But in dynasty leagues, people overvalue youth at a high, high amount. For example, in many of the dynasty leagues that I'm doing at the moment, you see someone like Luka Doncic getting picked in the top 25. Now, that's great. Luka Doncic could become a top 25 pick, or you could get someone who's already a top 25 pick in that spot. And that's the way that I tend to go in these sort of situations, is get the guy that I know that. Like, Luka Doncic could become anything. Like, he could actually become a top 25 player. But you're taking him like he's already there. Why not take someone who's already there? It just reminds me of that, I believe it was Family Guy, where he's got the option to pick a boat or to pick a box. And he's like, well, we take the box. Inside the box could be anything. It could even be a boat. That's the sort of impression that I get with these sort of scenarios with these rookies, that people take them. Oh, mate, they might become top 25. Where you've got a guy that's sitting there who is already top 25 and will be for the next 5, 6 years or whatever it is. And I feel like you're going to get at least 2 to 3 years of top 10 production out of Durant and Curry. So getting those two guys in the first and second round, now I don't know exactly what pick you had, but regardless, that means that one of them went at pick 13, which is really, really low. I don't think I'd be too concerned about it at all. And I think you are on a pretty strong path to being a challenger in this initial season of your dynasty draft. So thanks for your question, HeD. Let's look at the next one. It comes from hashtag Ironman. Haven't heard from you for a while. At Starks_industry. How many minutes does Harry Giles get this year, barring injury? Well, Giles was okay at some level. It was great to see him on the court, but with Willie Cauley-Stein, with Marvin Bagley III, with Skel Labissiere, with Costa Kufos, with Zach Randolph there, Giles is what, maybe, at worst case scenario, he's the 6th big on this team. Best case, he's the 4th big, maybe behind Randolph, Cauley-Stein, and Bagley. Maybe he's the 4th big, best case scenario. So I think if he got 20 minutes a game, you would be absolutely stunned. I would be stunned if he got 20 minutes per game at this point. He could be. Look, he wasn't like, he didn't come out in Summer League and completely destroyed. He had some moments. He looked better than Marvin Bagley at times. But that doesn't mean that he is going to be coming in and playing huge, huge chunks of minutes to start this season off. I think a 15-minute expectation with some time in the G League, not an every night part of the rotation on most nights, is a fair expectation from Giles. But he looked pretty good in Summer League. It was awesome to see him on the court. Whether he can ever return to the level of play he had in high school is, of course, the big question, and I would have to have some doubts on that. And the situation, again, with all these big men in Sacramento, plus I'm not even including Nemanja Bjelica or Bogdan Bogdanović, and Bjelica's best position is the four, and Bogdanović played a lot of minutes at the four last season as well, which takes more of those 96 front court minutes away from those six big men that I already mentioned. So I don't think we're going to be seeing huge, huge role for Harry Giles for this upcoming season. The next question comes from Richard Newell. He says, I know fantasy and real life are different, but why can't Kylo Quinn get more than 15 to 18 minutes a game unless someone's injured? In other words, why doesn't everyone love Cock? Rich, bringing the jokes to the podcast. Inconsistency is the big issue with Kylo Quinn. We know that the advanced metrics love Kylo Quinn. We know that he's, you know, PIPM, his box score plus minus, his PER. All those things are absolutely through the roof with O'Quinn. And when he's on the court, he produces for us in fantasy like almost, well, not no one else, but he's pretty bloody good at being able to produce numbers. In fact, you know, his per 36 numbers have been some of the best we've seen over the past couple of years. I'll just bring up what his per 36 rankings were over the past couple of seasons and have a look at that. Last season, he was the 13th best player on a per 36 minute basis for fantasy. The year before, he was 29th. The year before, he was 50th. These are in really limited minutes, of course. You know, true shooting of 63 last season. He averaged 14 and 12 with 2.5 blocks per 36 minutes. The year before, 3 blocks per 36 minutes. The year before that, 2.3 blocks. So he blocks shots. He can stretch to three, you know, in a pinch. It's not great there, but it is inconsistency with O'Quinn. It's sometimes the defensive concerns are there with him, but I do think that he has been given somewhat of a short shrift throughout his career. He was a plus 3.2 on off last season, which is obviously a positive. PER of over 20 the last 2 years. Big box score plus minuses. I would love to see him get a chance to start. I would love, if the Bulls hadn't have chosen Wendell Carter Jr., I would have loved for them to have gone for him. He would have been, I'd love to see him play on the Lakers instead of JaVale McGee, instead of Flamin' Mo Wagner. Love to see him in an extended role. Hate the way that he was treated in Orlando and the way they dealt him away for nothing and they didn't use him. But there just seems to be something about him that does rob teams the wrong way, and he seems penciled in as a career backup. But I guarantee you, if he was a starter anywhere, he'd be an easy top 100 fantasy guy, and he'd actually be a pretty serviceable NBA player. But there are defensive concerns with him at times, and there are some consistency problems. So that's probably the main reason. I'm not sure it's enough to have limited him as much in his career as what it currently has. The next question comes from Jordan at 416 Basketball. How do you handle late picks in head-to-head? I want upside, but I also want guys I can actually play in week one without hurting me. Last year, I remember cutting some rookies that turned out to be good because they were unplayable early in the season. Well, it is a difficult balancing act. In general, in week one, I don't really care if I lose week one because there's always weird shit that goes on. Like, you'll have Jamal Murray shooting 10% from three, Tim Hardaway going 19% from the field. You'll have guys like Jaylen Brown putting up 30 points a night, and people overreact like crazy, and that shit starts to even itself out after the first week or so. Rotations get settled, players get settled in new environments, and efficiency bounces back. So I don't really care if I lose that first week, but when I'm looking at late picks, I'm not taking someone like Mitchell Robinson most likely, because I don't think that he's going to be starting the season as the starter for the Knicks. I don't think he's going to be doing that anytime in the first 5 to 6 weeks, but I could see him getting an elevated role come January. But I don't think holding on to someone for that long is really the way I want to go. What I want to do with those late picks, or even someone perhaps like Wendell Carter, if we hear that he's going to be playing 19 minutes a night, then it's probably not worth taking that late pick on him unless you're in a roto league or in a weekly changes league where you can utilize your bench as literally just a stash spot. When you have to use those positions, it is a bit harder to do. I want guys in those last picks who have an ability to have a role immediately and develop into that, like Tyreek did last season, like perhaps we have with Brandon Knight for this coming season. Someone who can slide under the radar, who's going to have an opportunity from day one to be in that position to maybe blow up immediately. Now, things will change all through the season, and players will come into certain situations and certain positions as the season goes on. But I'm not taking someone like Ali Okobo with the last pick in my draft on the hopes that the Suns start him in February and things start to come to fruition. That's not the way I'm looking at it. Look, I'd take a guy like Kevin Knox at that last pick. It may not work out, and he might be able to do nothing but score inefficiently, and that can have its value in itself. But I'd take him and I'd hold him for the first couple of weeks, because I know he's going to have that role for those first few weeks, and let's see what happens. On the flip side, if we hear that Colin Sexton isn't starting, I probably wouldn't be picking him with my last pick, because as you said, yeah, he isn't going to provide very little very little value initially on that on your roster because limited minutes early on, and it might be December, it might be January when those things change around. So that's the way that I have a look at it, but I'm looking for guys who are going to have an opportunity straight away to have a role on a team, not someone who might have one by the trade deadline, because I'm not sure that's the best way to go about utilizing those picks in standard sort of formats. The next question comes from Pat Mumba at Pat LaRocco. He says, for a late bench spot, nine cat head-to-head, who would you take a chance with? Greggy Munro?
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
Jahlil Okafor or Emmanuel Mudiay? The answer to this question, Pat, is absolutely none of them. Unless you're talking about a 20-team league or a 30-team league, none of them. Okafor probably won't make the regular season roster. He's going to be behind Julius Randle, Nikola Mirotic, Anthony Davis, there's Emeka Okafor, there's Sheck Diallo there. He's just not good. I think we have to get in our head that he's just not good. And even if he does get there, he's a fourth center at best. He's not overtaking any of those other three players. So Okafor, forget it. Greg Munro, he's behind Jonas Valanciunas. He's behind Serge Ibaka. He is the third string center in Toronto. He can't really be on the court in high matchups. So yeah, he can play well in 20 minutes a game. He's just not getting 20 minutes a game up in Toronto. So no use there. And Emmanuel Mudiay, another third string point guard behind Trey Burke, behind Frank Ntilikina. He has never shown us to be a good NBA player heading into his fourth season. This league, Pat, would want to be pretty deep for you to even consider any of these three guys. I would want absolutely none of them on anywhere near my 12-team or even 14-team league. They are guys who you're looking at outside the top 200, 250, perhaps, or probably even 300 in the case of Mudiay and Okafor at least, and probably Munro, who's not going to be an every night player in Toronto, I don't think. The next question comes from Wyatt Albin, who's on Twitter at beat_sticks. What are the best nine categories for head-to-head? Well, in general, standard categories are standard for a reason. So that's your points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, threes, field goal percentage, free throw percentage, and turnovers. I hate turnovers. You're well aware of that. I don't mind playing in leagues with turnovers. I pay absolutely zero attention to them when I'm drafting, when I'm making any sort of decision. That is just an automatic punt for me. But I understand having them there. In terms of finding the best categories, well, it's really up and down. It's up in the air as to what your preference is. Last year in the Red Rock Challenge Leagues, I replaced field goal percentage and turnovers with two-point percentage and three-point percentage. I thought it went fairly well. The other way you can do it is you can replace rebounds and turnovers with offensive rebounds and defensive rebounds. Because one of the common, if you remove turnovers and add something else in, it's a disadvantage to big men outside of DeMarcus Cousins because the big men thrive on that turnover category. Well, add in an extra rebound category and it does still give them the benefit. But of course, if you are adding offensive rebounds and you can't just keep rebounds in, I hate a double dip. That's why I hate free throws made as a category. Because every time you make a free throw, it adds one to free throws made. It adds one to points as well. Same with a rebound. If you get an offensive rebound, it would add one to offensive rebounds and one to total rebounds. That's why I want to split them to offensive rebounds and defensive rebounds. It's the same way that just purely substituting 3-point percentage in for turnovers doesn't work for me because every time the 3-point percentage is impacted, the field goal percentage is also impacted. So that's why I'd want to split them to 2-point percentage and 3-point percentage. In the Red Rock 12 Derek Harper Dynasty League, which is starting today, I'm going for a completely different nine category set. A lot of the standards are still there. Points are there. Assists are there. Steals are there. Blocks are there. Those categories are still there. Free throw percentage is still there. But we're doing it a little bit different. We've eliminated three-pointers because they fall into that category where everyone's hitting them. And also, they're not like a rare thing. And they're a double dip in points. So I got rid of them. I got rid of turnovers, field goal percentage, and defensive rebound. So we're going with points, assists, steals, blocks, free throw percentage, 2-point percentage, 3-point percentage, offensive rebounds, defensive rebounds. So we're trying that in that league. We'll see how that all works out as things go on. But there's no set best one. Now, in terms of getting advice from people, if you're just using standard nine cats and being able to talk about relative value of players across formats, it's easiest to do that standard. With turnovers, again, your punt turnovers, so 9-cat and 8-cat advice is the same sort of thing. So that's handy in that sort of situation. The ideal thing, and I've said this plenty of times, I'd love to get hustle stats included. Now, whether that's them all combined into one hustle number, which includes screen assists, deflections, shots contested, There's a couple others. I can't really remember what they are. Loose ball gathered, whatever they are, added in there. I would love that as a number. It does help the big men because they get a lot of shots contested and screen assists. So that solves that problem of turnovers benefiting, having no turnovers benefiting guards. Having those hustle stats do benefit the big men, and it benefits defensive type players as well, who often in traditional box scores don't have that ability to rack up the numbers. So I really want these stats providers to start providing. The NBA tracks them clearly and it's on their website, but I want them to be a regular stat that you can include in fantasy as a hustle stat, screen assist, shot contested, shot deflections, all those sort of things bundled into one number. I think that would be a great way to go for fantasy. And I'm waiting, ESPN, Yahoo, Fantrax, if you're listening, let's get that shit added and I'll try it out and we'll see exactly how it goes. So thank you for your question, Wyatt. The next question comes from JR Tosh, who's on Twitter at JRyanTosh. If Isaac, Johnny Isaac, stays healthy and spends a lot of time on the floor with Mo Bamba,
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
How much of a hit do his defensive stats take? Is he top 100, top 125? Now, I understand that there would be a level of concern there because Bamba does block so many shots. Is that going to limit what Isaac can do? I can understand that, but Isaac's still going to get his blocks. Blocks aren't necessarily a finite resource. Well, they are, I guess, because the maximum amount of shots you can block in a game is the amount of field goal attempts a team takes. But that's never going to be the case. You're never blocking every single field goal attempt. We're talking 10% of shots, maybe 12% of shots, maybe. So having two guys out there that block shots, just because one guy blocks a lot of shots doesn't mean that the other guy can't also block shots. Isaac also last season wasn't getting his blocks by playing center. He was playing at small forward and power forward. Again, a position that's not going to be impacted by Mohamed Bamba. So while Bamba is there, and maybe you can say he's going to be protecting the rim, which of course he will be, when Isaac was getting those numbers last season, he was still playing with someone who was parked in the paint in preference to him, whether that was Vucevic, whether that was Biyombo, whether that was Aaron Gordon, whether it was Ken Birch, whatever they were doing in those lineups, it wasn't that Bamba is taking Isaac's positioning. And both of those guys can actually go out and produce block numbers. The steals we shouldn't have any concern about Mo Bamba having any impact on Isaac's steal numbers, which is one of his real strengths. You could make the argument that maybe Bamba being there, being a deterrent, could actually funnel more plays towards Isaac, which could boost his block number. So it really could go either way in that scenario, which means that I don't think I'd be too concerned about it. I do think that he's got he should be a top 150 player this season. It all depends on how Steve Clifford wants to use him. Give him 28 minutes a night, he's a top 100 guy. Give him 22 minutes a guy, he's probably a top 150 guy, and that triple one potential. I'm really, really excited to see what Isaac can do breakout style. I'm not convinced that Clifford is going to start him, but I think he's going to play big minutes at the three and at the two. And you'll see more John Simmons play at the three and the four. And you'll see more John Simmons push towards the two as a backup to Fournier as well to clear out some of those minutes for Isaac. So I am pretty interested in him and I'm not overly concerned with Bamba. And I hope although that reasoning there that I tried to throw out to you did make some sense. The next question comes from Bugsy Mogues on Twitter at NayBev69.
Giggity!
In my opinion, in my opinion, the most underrated characteristic of a good NBA player is basketball IQ. Your opinion on this, how it is evaluated, and its impact on fantasy production. I agree with you, Bugsy, that basketball IQ is a massive, massive part of things. Now, you can be as athletic as you want, shout out to Marquise Chris, but if you have no idea what you're doing, you've got very slow processing times in terms of where you need to be, a limited ability to see things unfold before they happen, whether that's offensively and defensively, shout out to Tony Roten, you're going to have a limited window to be successful in the NBA. Athletic skills, speed, jumping ability, that can only get you so far. Shooting skills, that's great. Yeah, shout out to Anthony Morrow. You can bang in every shot you want, but if you can't even provide a limited amount of positioning ability, of defensive awareness, of offensive awareness, then you are going to be limited. The players who are the best are the players who are the smartest. James Harden, Steph Curry, LeBron James, of course.
LeBron James!
They're ridiculously talented, but they use their intelligence and their mental abilities to extract the most out of their physical capabilities. James Harden is not athletic. He can dunk, he can throw down, and he can move to places, but his ability to use the timing of all that stuff that is really his benefit. when to throw the pass, where to throw the pass, when to decelerate, when to accelerate, when to draw that foul, what position to get into. Even defensively, his effort defensively is to do with lack of effort, which has been much improved recently. He's actually an average defender. He's not a horrible one. He's not a bad one by any stretch these days. But it's all about putting yourself in a position. How athletic is Joe Ingles? Yet he's one of the best defenders in the entire NBA because he is smart and he knows where to play. So basketball IQ is a massive, massive factor. Now, how it translates to fantasy? Well, what's the number one stat we want in fantasy? Minutes. You get minutes, unless you're Doug McDermott, you will produce numbers. Simple as that. You will be on the court and you will produce numbers. The best way to stay on the court is to be smart. You've got to be able to hit a shot, of course. You've got to be able to knock down shots and do and produce winning performances. But if you're dumb in a basketball sense and you can't provide that value outside of, I can knock down a three in an open gym, you know, 60 times out of 80. If you can't actually get yourself in a position to get open or find others to get open, then you're not going to get that playing time. So the way that basketball IQ can relate to fantasy production is players who are smart, eventually they will get the role and the role will come and the minutes will rise and the production will start to come as more confidence comes in their physical abilities that has been brought that way because of their mental abilities. Now, how can you evaluate it? It's obviously a tough one, but a lot of these advanced all-in-one metrics can give you an idea there. PIPM, on-off numbers, box score plus minus, PER probably not so much, wins added, win shares, all these sort of things, and you're not using one of these in isolation, but having a look at a whole range of them can give you an idea of this player's impact on the court. And impact often comes down to the ability to create winning plays by putting yourself in the correct position to be there, whether that's offensively, defensively. Someone asked me a question the other day, why do you hate Chris Dunn and love Ricky Rubio when they're the same player? My answer is they're not the same player at all. Yeah, both of them can't shoot very well, but one of them is a good offensive player and the other one is Chris Dunn. Because Ricky Rubio can't shoot, even though he was a much better shooter last season with his three-pointers especially. Dunn had his moments, but his ability to set everyone else up to be able to put himself in position and to recognize his limits in terms of shooting. Now, Chris Dunn took over 20 field goal attempts per 100 possessions last season. For a guy that can't shoot, that's way too many shots. That's I'm not saying Chris Dunn's a low IQ player or anything, but that's the difference there, is being able to set things up and create opportunities through angles, through positioning, all that sort of stuff. So, and you see that through Rubio's career of his, you know, on-off and advanced numbers are really very much in the positive for him throughout his career. It was a little bit negative last season, but yeah, as a general for his career, he's been a big positive in that area. So there's no one like, here's your IQ rating. But a number of those factors and those advanced metrics, on off data, all that sort of stuff, real plus minus, it does take into consideration. It doesn't take into consideration, but it's sort of, your IQ is reflected in a lot of those numbers. Long answer to that one. Sorry. Khalil Ibrahim at Khalil_2103. Any tips on the upcoming draft for the draft-only league? Now, I know one of the draft-only leagues started yesterday. One of them has started today. And if you don't know what draft-only is, draft-only is you draft. That's it. It's basically like a mock draft, but what you do is you make all your selections, extended benches, and you don't make any waiver wire moves. You use no trades during the season. Your roster is your roster. So it's low maintenance. It's a zero maintenance league. You draft everyone and you sit there. We're doing head-to-head ones, roto ones, and points ones. Basically, everyone's active in the roto and head-to-head one. You don't even set your lineup each week. And in the points one, that the software does a best ball system where your best, I think it's 10 players, get activated each week based on what they score for the week. So how do you do this? Now, obviously, you've got to be able to pick guys who you think... There's two ways of doing it. I think... You can look at guys who are going to have consistent production, especially in those head-to-head and roto where the whole roster is active each week. If you've got guys who are going to be zeros for big chunks of time, like
percentages,
like Boogie Cousins, then that's probably not going to work out because you're just going to get zeros and zeros and zeros and zeros for weeks and weeks and weeks. Same with a guy that, like I referenced earlier, Mitchell Robinson. Maybe you get zeros there for the first 2 months, but is it enough that when he does move into a larger role and leapfrog ahead of Luke Kornet or Isaiah Hicks or Joakim Noah, who probably won't even be on the team, is that value going to be there? The other thing I think you should look at in draft-only leagues is handcuffing. Now, handcuffing is a shit strategy in fantasy basketball leagues in general. Most of the time, these guys who are backups, backup centers, backup point guards, would be the only ones you'd really look at, because in general, if a two or three or four goes down, there's generally not one player who takes that role. It's spread across multiple different guys. But if a point guard goes down or if a center goes down, we see someone step into that role. But in general, that means that backup's playing 17 minutes a night or, you know, 18 minutes a night on a regular basis. And in a 12-team league, holding someone just in case your starter gets hurt and you have to actually use these guys every week, 17 minutes is not going to cut it. But in a draft-only league, you've got that guy that, so if your starter does go down, especially in the best ball formats, then you've got that replacement that immediately steps in. So you might see a marginal drop in production, but you don't see a huge amount. So I think handcuffing in draft-only leagues is a much better scenario. You want to also look at the guys who you think at some point are going to get an increased opportunity. Again, I keep using that Mitchell Robinson type example. You could even use someone like young bull Colin Sexton and have a go at him. Maybe it's Mo Wagner, maybe it's Mo Bamba. Either of those guys, you could have a squeeze at them. But remember, if it's the head-to-head or the roto-type one, you're going to be getting zeros on some of these guys as your active roster is set up that way. The next question comes from 8th Leo. He says, what are your top 10 do not draft players? Also, he just says, your top 10 D&D, which is do not draft players list. 8th Leo, I'm not sure how long you've been listening to this podcast, or anyone listening to this podcast or following me on Twitter would know. It is absolutely empty. I do not have a do not draft list because they are bullshit. They're bullshit. Now, you could phrase it in a different way. Who won't I draft based on their current ADP? And that's a different story. And I went through that and talked about guys who were too high on ESPN rankings, Marvin Bagley at 69, for example. That's someone who, if they're going at that position, there's zero chance I'm going to end up with them on any team. It's just not going to be the case for me. If that's, you know, Emmanuel Mudiay at 46, probably not going to draft him at 46. Isaiah Thomas at 50, you can probably have it. But in terms of do not draft list, it just doesn't exist for me. Because at any point, there's going to be value in certain players. Now, of course, I could say that, you know, Derek Rose is on my do not draft list for standard leagues. No shit. But if I'm not in a standard league, he's not on my do not draft list. There's no players where I'm just avoiding them. Now, Porzingis and Cousins, I'm not taking them in the top 50. If they fall outside the top 100, sure, I'll grab them, but that doesn't mean they're on my do not draft list. You need to go in with a completely clear mind to drafts, I believe. You've got to understand where players are going and what the value is, but it's too many people going. I think there's a real recipe for disaster in fantasy drafts, is that people go in with one of two, they go with multiple mindsets, but these two mindsets I think really can be detrimental. I've got to make sure I get this guy. Man, Don Mitchell loved him. He won my draft. I've got to make sure I reach for him and grab him this season. It's bullshit. Like, that's all well and good, but you're attaching a physical profile to a set of numbers. And it's all good. It comes from Donovan Mitchell. We all love Donovan Mitchell. He seems like an absolute ripper bloke. He does a lot of great stuff in the community. He's massively fun to watch, and he produces great numbers. But if you go, well, there's a Jazz fan in my draft and they're going to take Mitchell at 25. And so, but my pick before that's at 18. So I have to get him because I know this guy's going to get him. He won't get back around to me. Well, you know what you do? You just let him go. Let's go. Oh, that's fine. Someone else have him and I'll get someone else who's more commensurate with my actual draft spot in that position. Going in with guys, I have to get this guy. I've got to make sure I target John Collins. Therefore, I'm going to grab him at pick 50. Well, maybe, but what if you can get him at 80? Or what if you can get someone else in that same zone who provides similar value at that same sort of spot? It's all about getting the value and going in with an idea of I have to get this guy and I have to, if anyone says I want to reach for this guy, look, don't, as soon as that comes out of your brain or it comes out of your brain into your mouth, I have to reach for him, then you just go, well, you know what, let's go in a different direction. The same thing with do not draft this, never drafting this guy again. Okay, that's Gordon Hayward, man. He's a bum. He's my third round pick last year. Cost me the lead 5 minutes. Never draft him again. So what if he's sitting there at pick 70? You're going to ignore it? No. Well, if you are, you're wrong and you've lost your league. That's what I mean by do not draft this has to be empty. Don't go in with, look, I'm never drafting this guy and I have to draft this guy, because that's just not how shit works. You can say, well, I've got this list of guys and I think they're going to slide down and I'm real happy to grab them and their ADP is 110. I've got them as the 50th best player. I'll grab them at 80. That's not a reach. That's totally fine. If their ADP is 110, you've got them as the 50th best player and you grab them at 40 because you've got to have them, that's stupid. So clear your mind. Clear your do not draft list. Clear your I must have this guy list. It's going to happen with many guys. Donovan Mitchell is going to be one of them. He's going to be almost the number one of these guys this season. Man, he's so fun. Got to have Spider. Yeah, Spider. And you're going to end up losing value for doing that. And it is fun to have him. And I must sound like a real funless prick here. But don't have fun in your picks. Just pick the numbers, man. Like, I must sound like a complete dickhead, but I'm here to try and teach you guys the mechanics of fantasy or describe them or explain them or discuss them. And if you're here if you're just doing it to have fun and pick the players that make you smile the most, then by all means, go and do that. But it's not necessarily going to turn into a winning strategy. Didn't mean to get as animated there. The next question from Eric Dober, who's on Twitter at dmuller77. Is Lonzo Ball a better keeper choice than Donovan Mitchell? Didn't realize this question was coming up after I just spoke about Donovan Mitchell that much. Is Lonzo Ball a better keeper choice than Donovan Mitchell? It's a very interesting question. If Lonzo's shot comes around, and by comes around, I mean he hits 44% of them, 72 from the line and 34 from three, which they are very, very low bars to pass. He's a top 20 player. Simple as that. Donovan Mitchell, I think, has got top 10 upside, 25 points per game, 4 to 5 rebounds, 5.5 assists, 1.5 to 1.8 steals, 2.5 to 2.7 threes, high free throw percentage. If he gets that field goal percentage way up, he is a top 10 player. Lonzo, I feel, doesn't have that top 10 upside, but he does have top 20 upside if the percentages come around. I preferably, at this point, would probably keep Mitchell, but I can understand it the other way, because Lonzo's rebound, steals, blocks, and assist combination is a really hard quartet of stats to get together. He could be an 8-rebound, 8-assist, 2-steal, 1-block player, which is almost unheard of. And if I had have done any preparation for this question in advance, I would have looked up to see if anyone's actually done that in NBA history. My instinct is nobody ever has. But Lonzo could do it. Last season, he was still close to a top 50 guy, despite shooting negative 24% from the field. Like, he's still that guy because of these other numbers. And if any of that shooting comes around at all, then it's a clear top 50. Shit, try again. Clear top 20. Not sure that it will, but it can. I would take the Don because I just want that top 10 upside that I think he can provide, the 25, 5, and 5 type of numbers. I think he can get there, but it's far from a guarantee. And some people might scoff at this question and go, man, it's easily Donovan Mitchell. Man, he's the true rookie of the year. People will think that. It's not as clear cut in fantasy. I think both, it could really very much be next to each other in rankings for a very, very long time to come. So I do like that question, Eric. Thank you for throwing it in there. Next question we look at, Jeff Bartholomew on Twitter at @doc_jan_itor. Can Joshy Richardson actually put up the 18 points this year like Riley is touting? What's his ceiling this year and dynasty-wise? Well, Pat Riley's a little bit optimistic, I think, there with Joshy Richardson being able to score 18 per game. I think Josh can be a top 40 player this season. He was obviously excellent last year. We don't know if Dwayne Wade's coming back. Dion Waiters, who knows if Dion Waiters is actually ever going to be healthy again. That's a legitimate concern. This ankle thing's been a 2-year problem for him. Richardson was the 57th ranked player last season. He does have to improve his offense, but he can, I think, go from the 13 points per game he scored last season to 15 this year. I think that's a possibility if his efficiency jumps back up, which we have seen in the past. I think he's the Heat's best player, and I think he can take that leap forward. I don't think he can leap up into 18 points per game. His overall ceiling is probably tops out at top 30, I would guess. Maybe even top 40 is his absolute ceiling. But I think that 18 point, look, I could be wrong. Players have taken pretty significant leaps forward. Could he jump forward 5 points per game this year? That's what Riley's intimating. I'm not sure he does that, but I think he's obviously a quality player who blocks shots, gets steals, can handle the ball as well, score, hit threes, and do it relatively efficiently. So I do think that he can improve on last season, but whether he gets to that 18 points per game, I'd be a little skeptical about that. Zoran Geeko on Twitter at Zoran Geeko. How do you set up a format where injuries have less of a detrimental impact on a participant's season? Well, obviously you cannot eliminate injuries because injuries happen. Injuries occur during the NBA season. We saw a Chris Paul injury potentially cost the Rockets a chance at an NBA title. Injuries happen. They happen at the worst possible times. Of course, we can't control them for fantasy. NBA teams can't control them either. So how do you set up a format where they have less of an impact? Well, there's a couple of ways. Roto leagues are a good way of doing that because obviously we're not reliant upon the playoffs. So in a 1 week matchup, if one of your guys goes down, then you've banked those stats. You know, you're screwed in head to head, but in Roto, you've banked them for the first 60, 70 games they've played. Now, last season, I said this before, I had Porzingis and Cousins in a Roto league, and I was on top, and I ended up finishing third because I couldn't deal with losing those two guys for the last 3 months of the season, and other people caught me despite, you know, working the waiver wire like crazy to try and do it. So it is hard to do that, but Roto leagues are way more forgiving of schedule and of injuries as well. But it's not a guarantee, and they're not going to eliminate that problem. Having longer playoffs, which is more important, as I talked about in the schedule analysis, you have a 5 week playoff or a 6 week playoff versus a 3 week playoff, where those little injuries where one or two games get missed in a week, are less impactful than what they are. You miss two games out of a four game week versus two games out of an 8 week fortnight, then it's obviously 50% versus 25%. So a much, much less significant impact on the overall production for your team that week. So having longer playoffs is another way of doing that. Another way you can do it is increasing your IR spots. Now, it doesn't necessarily help because you're still losing those stats, but at least you don't have to drop those players. And the next one is having averages instead of totals. So we go through and we add up in fantasy, you know, how many threes did your team hit? But you can do it and set it up as averages. Like, what is my average 3 points, you know, per game over my whole team? So if I have my stud in there, LeBron, and he gets hurt and he plays only two of the four games, yeah, maybe instead of me accumulating 100 points for the week, I would have only accumulated 50, but it's still 25 per game if you do it by averages. Now, you have to have certain rules in there with averages where there's got to be a minimum amount of games played, because if you just have, you know, you don't have that, then I'll just start LeBron and nobody else, and then his averages will beat everyone else's averages. So you've got to have minimum games set in those type of leagues. But that is a way that you can try and at least eliminate the week-to-week injury problem. Over the course of the season, though, Roto is probably your best way at being able to limit the impact of injuries. Unfortunately, they are something that is obviously a pain in the ass. Last question of today comes from Vass_Char on Twitter at VassChar93. What is really the upside of DRC Zaire Smith next to players like Benny Simmons, Joel Embiid, and Markel Fultz? Is there enough space, and will he have the opportunity to justify picking him ahead of Miles Bridges, who has a more clear path in 2 to 3 years in Dynasty? It's an interesting question because, of course, with those three guys in Philly, where does Zaire sit? But if you look at rosters across the NBA, they change so rapidly. Now, coming out here and saying that the Sixers aren't going to have Fultz, Simmons, and Embiid in 3 years' time would seem crazy. But if I had said the same thing to you about the Cavs in 3 years' time, they won't have Kyrie and LeBron, you would have gone, what are you talking about, mate? Like, get out of here. Like, shit happens all the time. Players get traded. Hey, the Spurs don't have Kawhi anymore. Paul George isn't on the Pacers. Durant left the Thunder. People move and change all the time. Injuries happen. Situations happen. So in this sort of case, I don't really look at Bridges as this game-changing type of talent. And maybe he has a path there where when Nick Batum ages out and Bridges can take that starting small forward job. But what if Bridges is just never good? Which is a real possibility. He could be good, but he might not be. Smith has the ability with his athleticism, with his defensive IQ, with his ability to block shots and get steals, with an ability to show an improvement in his shooting, that he could become a really top level player. It might be on Philadelphia. It might necessitate a trade of Fultz, of Simmons. Who knows what happens in the next 3 years? Anything can happen there. So in general, when I'm picking in that 10 to 12 to 15 range of dynasty drafts for rookies, I want the guy who I feel like's got more of that star upside. Maybe it doesn't work out. But also, Bridges might top out as a top 90 guy with also the same level of it not working out risk that there is with Zaire, but he might top out as a top 50 guy. So I know which direction I would like to go. But it is a legitimate concern when you look at things as the prism of the current roster. But go back and look at the 2015 NBA season and go and peruse all the NBA rosters. And you'll just go, shit, like, this is wild, man. Like, nothing is the same. Everything is all over the place in terms of roster. Players move forward, move back, regress, have weird shit go on all the time, and things open up. So let me just take that flyer on that upside type of guy, which is what I believe Zaire Smith is, even though he will be missing the start of the year with that broken foot. Guys, that will wrap it up for today. Go leave a review for this podcast. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, 5 stars is the way to go. I know many of you are hesitant in wanting to recommend this podcast. I don't want to tell people about it because then I lose my edge. I'm not telling people that basketball wants you to lose your edge. And I understand that. And it's one of the drawbacks of doing a show like this is people want to keep it to themselves. Of course, for me, I want it to grow. But the risk there is, and I'm not trying to sound dramatic or anything like that, but if people don't tell anyone about the show and it starts to not grow or regress, then in the end, the show doesn't exist. So then in the end, everyone loses. Because if the show just doesn't grow and people start dropping off and people don't listen and new listeners aren't coming in, then it doesn't exist. And the same thing goes with things like Basketball Monsters. So it might seem like a pain in the ass. I don't want people to know about this. But in the end, you know, these things that require people to listen to them to continue, they need people to listen to them. So I'm not telling you to go out and tell all your friends or anything like that. But that's a hard thing for me personally, just letting you behind the scenes here, of me trying to do, you know, shows like this. And I'm trying to get it out to as many people as possible, but the people listening want to really limit that audience. And it's a hard balance to try and get through. So any review you can do is a great way of helping me in that regard. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble, the Locked On Podcast Network at @LockedOnNBAnet, and Basketball Monster at @BaskMonster. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. CJ McCollum.